Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 20th day of March, now 2021. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and there's so much news today that I'm going to start off with the setup pieces during this first segment, and then move on to the absolutely vitally important singular story in the next round after the bottom of the hour break. We, of course, had a whole bunch of stories this week that just say more of the same in a more and more obviously totalitarian regime. Formerly free people are being muzzled and treated like slaves. We're getting used to that. Now they're injecting people by literally the millions worldwide. And the massive numbers of short-term deaths associated with that are arguably the least important aspect of what's being done, as the massive experiment designed to incubate new varieties of the booga-booga flu is now using much of the human population as living bioreactors. And if you don't know what that means, definitely stay with me. But let's start off again with the lawlessness abounds theme. So remember, folks, it's just fine to riot in Portland or Seattle or other communist-run cities and loot a Target store or maybe a few small businesses that were pretty much already walking dead anyway. And who's going to notice another Molotov cocktail or six among all that carnage? And you can certainly invade via the southern border, come and get all your advertised freebies, and bring along all the diseases you want. But for crying out loud, don't even think you have a right to freedom of speech, of worship, of assembly, or especially to petition your government for a redress of grievances. Big Brother's had trouble getting rid of all of those rights simultaneously, but that may be what a good invasion at the southern border is really all about. Video clips of massive lines of migrants waiting to cross the southern border have gone viral, even as the mainstream media maintains their eerie silence about the growing numbers of children in cages, a.k.a. border detention facilities. And CBS News reported Tuesday that there are over 13,000 migrant children now in U.S. custody. So that's a lot of cages, even if they're stuffing them in there in big groups. And as the crisis unleashed by the new regime worsens, former but arguably still elected President Trump returned for an interview with Fox Business host Maria Bartiromo, where he laid into the senile one for aggravating the border crisis by reinstating the catch-and-release program and rolling back other forms of border enforcement. During the primetime interview, Trump told Bartiromo that he and Mexican President AMLO had a, quote, great relationship, and that he and AMLO had shared a joint interest in controlling, before the Biden regime, illegal migration at the border, saying that this current wave will, quote, destroy our country if we don't do something about it, and quickly. Said related stories, they're currently coming in at rates of well over 100,000 a month, and that's just based on those that are being detained. In one of those stories, Leo Holman says his sources in the Department of Homeland Security suggest over 5,000 migrants a day, or something like 140,000 a month, are flooding into American cities. And interestingly, would you believe, anywhere from 6 to 14% of those are testing positive for the booga booga flu. And don't forget, that includes all the wonderful new variants. Referring to those masses of migrants, including other than Mexicans, now flooding into the open southern border, the president said, "They are going to destroy our country if we don't do something about it," unquote. And of course, folks, as we know, that is the intention. Meanwhile, the official press liar knows zero hedge, Jen Psaki, told so-called reporters that that regime is doing everything they can to stop the flood of immigrants. Well, everything they note, except reviving policies that worked just a couple of months ago and were deep six by executive fiat. Oh, and it doesn't seem to help too much, your host notes, when the marionette-in-chief tells them to come on in. This next item is one that I almost started with. Back when we had an honest press, and some of us are old enough to remember that, it would have been big news. Nowadays, because we don't, they don't even want to talk about it. Because it's the lie that's the big news, not when they get caught. I'm referring to one of the biggest WAPO frauds, and there have been several, but this is one of the biggest. It was even used by the criminal Democrats in the Communist House as a grounds for impeachment. That would be number two of the duly elected president, who they claim tried to strong-arm a Georgia election official in order to find the fraud that cost him, not to mention the formerly free American Republic, a rigged election. And since he was the one that took it on the chin, let's go to the president for his response. Former President Trump, says the story from Zero Hedge, has issued a response after the WAPO admitted to publishing a story that basically was a bald-faced lie, accusing the president of pressuring a Georgia official to, quote, find the fraud, a statement that was debunked by actual audio of the call, but not, of course, before it, as intended, spread through left-wing mainstream media echo chambers like wildfire. The original story was that the WAPO just out-and-out lied when they claimed that they had a transcript and a recording of then-President Donald Trump in a phone call with Francis Watson, chief investigator with the Georgia Secretary of State's office. The call took place in December. On January 9th, the WAPO reported that Trump told Watson to, quote, find the fraud that he claims happened during the 2020 election, and that if she did, she'd be a, quote, national hero. But an actual recording, and your host has listened to the whole thing, folks, he was very much supportive and friendly, reveals he said no such thing. Instead, the recording actually shows, after a cordial introduction and complimenting her for the work she was doing, he urged the investigator to scrutinize ballots in Fulton County and asserted that she would find, quote, dishonesty there, after which Trump added that she had, quote, the most important job in the country right now. Concerning that fraud, which the WAPO is now trying to cover up and backpedal, while issuing a so-called retraction that really isn't, said President Trump, via DonaldJTrump.com, the Washington Post just issued a correction as to the contents of the incorrectly reported phone call, isn't he kind, I had with respect to voter fraud in the great state of Georgia. While I appreciate the WAPO's correction, which immediately makes the Georgia witch hunt a non-story, the original story was a hoax, he said right from the very beginning. I would further appreciate a strong investigation into Fulton County, Georgia, and the Stacey Abrams political machine, which he said he believes would totally change the course of the presidential election in Georgia, if there was actually to be an honest investigation. Fulton County, he noted, has not been properly audited for vote or signature verification. And he went on to basically note that they merely rubber-stamped the fraud that they'd already pretty much gotten away with. Furthermore, he adds the consent decree signed by Raffensperger, that would be the crooked top Georgia election official, and Stacey Abrams, was not approved by the Georgia State Legislature and therefore should be deemed invalid and the election result changed. Why the governor and Raffensperger ever approved this consent decree, said the president, is one of the great questions, and we look forward to an answer. Now, there's another interesting element to this, folks, and that is that Frances Watson evidently had the recording all along. She didn't seem to have told the president that she was making it, which certainly raises eyebrows. She may have tried to delete it from her phone, which further ought to raise some eyebrows. And finally, while all of this was going on and the president was being falsely accused, even on the floor of Congress, she kept silent and didn't even have the integrity to come forward and say, hey, they're lying about that phone call that I had with the president. I was there. By Friday, Georgia Deputy Secretary of State Jordan Fuchs was outed as the unnamed source who promulgated the great big whopping lie. It'll be interesting to see who ends up being the real scapegoat here, if in fact the story doesn't just disappear. Because once the damage is done, whether we're talking massive election fraud or the massive cover-up, whether it's the press or the crooked courts, they got away with it. So the whole matter is moot. Besides, you peons don't have standing anyway. From there, I'm inclined to introduce these next few stories with a question, because I really do have to wonder, were people in Stalinist Russia chuckling, at least quietly, out of sight of their neighbors, at the whoppers that Pravda and Izvestia were trying to get them to swallow? We do at least have some anecdotal evidence on that score. In Russian, Pravda means truth and Izvestia means news, but the old joke about the Soviet press was, there's no truth in Pravda and no news in Izvestia. How about in East Germany during the time of the Stasi, or before that in the Third Reich? Were they trying to relieve the tension when they really thought they were alone by laughing at the absurdity of what was being done to them? Well, at least until the Civil War gets started in earnest, we certainly need to. Here's one from Zero Hedge, the TN Star and Fox News, and any number of others that are watching the hypocrisy here with at least a chuckle behind closed doors. The Biden regime climate envoy, Acting John Kerry, took off his mask and was photographed as he settled into a book in his first-class seat just before takeoff on an American Airlines flight from Boston to the D.C. swamp. He wasn't eating or drinking, say observers. He was simply flaunting the Biden Fuhrer's mandatory mask policy. Now, we know this. Some animals are more equal than others,
And some pigs obviously don't have to wear muzzles, much less worry about being investigated for their multiple crimes. In a statement to Fox News, the anonymous passenger that took the photo, which is in fact going viral, at least until it's completely expunged from the web, said the president's climate envoy was wearing his mask at the boarding gate, only to ditch it as soon as he got on the plane before all the lesser passengers. And here's what he quipped. I salute our very special presidential envoy for climate for not flying private, but instead flying first-class commercial with the rest of us common folk. Adding, while he can't bring himself to follow his own party's mask restrictions, we ought to cut him some slack because, after all, being an elite hypocrite is hard work. Asked to clarify why some people are above the mask mandates, the American Airlines official sycophant tweeted, masks are required on board our aircraft. Und wir are looking into this. Yeah, sure. Don't hold your breath. But if you wear your mask, you won't have to. Oh, and when it comes to the Fourth Reich's public-private partners, most of the world's airlines, in other words, they are rolling out what is called a trial of the IATA International Travel Pass. The International Air Transport Association, Achtung, successfully trialed, says the Zero Hedge summary, their new health passport app called Travel Pass to manage COVID-19 tests and all the little slaves who are going to take their COVID-19, a.k.a. Zyklon B, poke if they're going to be allowed to fly internationally. Well, unless, of course, they're above the law, obviously. Travelers at London Heathrow Airport were the first to be subjected to the IATA Travel Pass app to manage their health credentials. Und said IATA's Director General und CEO, quote, the successful implementation of IATA Travel Pass in this trial with Singapore Airlines demonstrates that technology can securely, conveniently, and efficiently help travelers and governments to manage these slaves' travel health credentials. Hey, you remember the World War II movies, folks? Your travel pass, bitte? Continued the Director General. The significance of this to restarting new totalitarian international aviation cannot be overstated. And that, folks, is at least true. By the way, for those of you that have read Revelation, can you just smell the mark of the beast in this as well? But let's be honest here, folks. When it comes to real thigh slappers, if you have the right attitude anyway, it's tough to top the senile Biden Führer himself, who was caught on a green screen trying to fool the dumbed-down people one more time. Here's the story. You won't be able to see the video, unfortunately, but I encourage you to look it up, at least until they expunge this one. It'll be out there. Before boarding Marine One early Wednesday, the fake president made a rare live appearance, yeah, sure, before the press. Well, at least his digital avatar did, say a number of the summaries that I've seen. The one I downloaded and looked at in slow-mo came from Brighteon.com and Natural News. While speaking through his mandated mask, the senile one was seen walking up, ha-ha, to the microphones of the assembled loud press, whereupon he began waving his hands around, including doing the impossible, behind one or two of the microphones allegedly being held by reporters. And even though the image of the Biden Führer was clearly several feet away, the hand mysteriously moved throughout space-time to the other side of the mic, making it pretty darn clear that it wasn't the real live Biden Führer anyway. Who knows, folks? He could have been dead for a month by now, and Americans wouldn't have figured it out yet, that was used to create the fake footage. Obviously, somebody was in front of a green screen. Oh, and what did he say? Who cares? We're pretty sure he doesn't remember it himself anyway. One thing's for sure now, though. The gaffes will no longer come from his mouth. They'll come from his hands. And the failures of the puppeteers and editors. So laugh out loud while you still can. Well, eventually, folks, we have to get around to the not-so-funny, maybe even scary, but still totalitarian overreach. A diplomatic freeze, says the Daily Mail's coverage of a particularly nasty event, as Russia now has dramatically recalled their U.S. ambassador back to Moscow for consultation, says the headline, after the Biden Führer called President Putin, who looks like a real statesman of the people by comparison, a killer. The move, says the U.K. spin, comes after the White House spent weeks telegraphing a tougher posture towards Russia, Russia, Russia under the Biden regime, and Moscow has once again begun to bristle at accusations that it serves as a malign influence. Talk about four fingers pointing back. In global affairs, in a softball interview with leftist Twinkie George Steffi Stephanopoulos, with respect to the late Rush Limbaugh, Biden said he wanted to start a war with Russia over that bogus intel report asserting that Russia interfered in the 2020 election. Oh, come on. I said this wasn't going to be funny, but it really kind of is. After threatening Putin, the communist Chinese puppet said he will pay a price. Well, folks, so will the United States and indeed the whole world if these evil minions of Satan walking in men's shoes complete what they've got planned. After I finished that story, but before I uploaded this report for today, I saw an update courtesy of Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, who said that in reaction to Biden's comments, Putin said Thursday, "I remember in my childhood, when we argued in the courtyard, we used to say, it takes one to know one." And that's not a coincidence, not just a children's saying or joke. Reported Reuters, Putin implied that Biden was projecting his own self-assessment, saying, quote, "We always see our own traits in other people and think they are like how we really are. And as a result, we assess a person's activities and give assessments," unquote. Game, set, match, Putin. And I can't help but wonder if Biden will even understand what Putin just told him. Folks, this Biden puppet is too senile now to even be able to play checkers anymore. I find myself thinking back to Belteshazzar during the time of the prophet Daniel in the Babylonian exile. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin was the handwriting on the wall. It boiled down to found wanting, or weighed, measured, divided. This next item is from Ethan Huff at Natural News, and it would have been a really big story if there was still a Republican in the White House, because after all, only people like Hillary Clinton and now creepy quid pro Joe Biden and his puppet masters are able to get away with outright murder. Back in December, it begins. Harrison Deal, a young staffer who worked for former Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler, died in what the Waystream media called a car crash. But according to attorney Sidney Powell, Deal was actually Arkansided. Well, she said murdered. And during a recent appearance on The Right Side with Doug Billings, Powell explained that the alleged car crash was, quote, no car accident at all, but rather a planned assassination.
That was no car accident. He was vaporized by whatever the explosion was. Some people who know more about it than I do tell me it had to have been thermite to have triggered a fireball such as happened in that car. And then the Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent who was investigating it was found dead by gunshot wound to the head within a week.
And it would seem that the reason for these two murders is that Loeffler and her team were getting too close to the truth concerning those involved with, what else, the heist of the 2020 election, and they needed to be silenced. Said Powell, there are trillions of dollars of global wealth at stake. There are people from both political parties that are implicated in all the crimes here, and there were crimes committed, destruction of evidence being among them.
There are trillions of dollars of global wealth at stake. There are people from both political parties that are implicated in all the crimes here, and there were crimes committed, destruction of evidence being among them. I mean, there are any number of crimes that could have and should have been prosecuted arising from this election for all kinds of fraud. And then there's the international aspect of it, because there's substantial evidence, and I think there'll be more forthcoming, that China and Iran played a large role in flipping votes for Biden and rigging this election.
What? Not Russia, Russia, Russia? Why, somebody ought to let the Biden Fuhrer know before he fat-fingers World War III. Oh, well, wait a second. I guess that's the point of having a CCP puppet in the White House. You get the United States to destroy your other enemy and vice versa. On the invasion at the southern border front, as we talked about earlier in the week, the Biden regime is flummoxed. Shocked, I tell you, that there could possibly be such a massive number of people coming across just because they've been promising them free goodies and amnesty forever. Why, Jen Psaki even said the following when she announced that any 10-year-old, or presumably plus or minus maybe 15 years from there, who manages to make it across the southern border will be allowed to stay forever. Quote, "Our policy continues to be," she said, "we're not going to send a 10-year-old back across the border. That was the policy of the last administration. That's not our policy here. So come on in. Big Brother is just loving anybody who's not a native-born American, and we'll give you a lot of free stuff, too." Now, do you think maybe that's over the top, or maybe Jen Psaki is talking out of turn because her boss is incapable of speaking for himself? Well, it turns out she's not alone. Other puppets of the regime are also inviting the foreigners to come on in. The CCP puppets DHS chief Alejandro Mayorkas threw gasoline on the fire as well Thursday when he told the world that billions of unaccompanied children are allowed to search the border because they will not be expelled.
Morons. I've got morons on my team.
Speaking to CBS this morning, the Homeland Secretary said, "We will not expel your child if you send him here alone." Listen to this, quote, "Some loving parents might." Loving parents? Yeah, he said that. Some loving parents might send their child to traverse Mexico alone to reach the southern border. Oh, if you really love your kids, folks, turn them over to some coyotes. And if they survive, then they win the big prize. Said Mayorkas, "I hope they don't undertake that perilous journey, but if they do, we will not expel that young child." And these blithering idiots wonder, or at least we're supposed to believe that they wonder, why there are literally millions of people lining up to come and invade the formerly free United States.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Miss Blue.
I guess.
There's a point, folks, way beyond stupid, where it's just plain no longer funny. Next, I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about a great piece from Dr. Ron Paul, who now signs himself as Ron Paul, M.D., for the Ron Paul Institute, writing, "Is Biden holding America hostage until Independence Day?" Beginning by saying that last week, the Biden Fuhrer addressed the nation on the first anniversary of the COVID-19 being declared a pandemic. It was, he says, a disturbing speech, warning us that the, quote, "hopeful spring" will only emerge from what the senile one is so fond of invoking, or at least his puppet masters are, a dark winter, and that's only if all Americans, quote, "stick with the rules." Whose rules, said Dr. Paul? Well, of course, his. The message from the erstwhile president was clear. He will only allow us to have some of our freedoms back if we do exactly as he tells us. It was the language of extortion, he says, of a bank robber who demands you do exactly what he says or face the consequences. It was clearly not the language of someone we're told, at least, as the leader of the free world. In the speech, Biden laid out a list of what was taken from us over the past year. Quote, "weddings, birthdays, graduations, family reunions, the Sunday night rituals." It was, says Dr. Paul, as if somehow the virus, instead of the authoritarian government and its officials, prevented us from enjoying these normal human activities. And though we continue to see COVID disappear from across the country with the end of the winter season, and of course more vitamin D, as at least a few people are allowing themselves back outside, Biden was not about to let go of his perceived power to control our lives. He said, "If we all do this, if we do our part, if we do this together, by July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends, will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cocktail or a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day. That doesn't mean large events, of course, with lots of people together, but it does mean small groups will be allowed to gather together." Imagine, said Dr. Paul, if our founders heard this speech. The president might, just might, allow small family gatherings at home in 4 months if we follow all of his rules. King George, obviously, looked downright benevolent by comparison. As Representative Thomas Massie tweeted shortly after that horrible speech, quote, "If you're waiting for permission from the chief executive, sick, to celebrate Independence Day with your family, you clearly don't grasp the concept of independence," unquote. Or for that matter, folks, what generations of Americans, far better than any that are sitting still for this crap today, fought and in far too many cases died for. Many are perhaps rolling over in their graves today wondering why they bothered. And isn't July 4th actually more than the 100 days out that the Biden Fuhrer was originally touting? As usual, continues Dr. Paul, the goalposts just keep getting moved because politicians can't bear the possibility they might eventually have to give up some of the power over us that they've grabbed for themselves. Fauci made the usual waste stream media rounds over the weekend and was asked by a fawning host when Americans just might be allowed to hold weddings again. So now, says Dr. Paul, Americans need Fauci's permission to get married. What's happening to this country? The propaganda is so relentless that it seems most Americans just don't see how not normal all of this is. In saner times, Fauci would have been laughed off the stage. Let me say it this way, folks. In saner times, Fauci would have been tarred and feathered and ridden out of town on a rail. And if he'd been tried at Nuremberg with the other Nazis, he'd have gotten what he really deserved. Now, says Dr. Paul, though, he's treated as some sort of divine truth. Well, it's hardly divine, folks. Biden promised that he would use every power as the Führer of the United States to put us on a war footing. Well, says Dr. Paul, and yeah, I paraphrase that just a bit, Biden's war is certainly not against the virus. It's against the U.S. Constitution and the very concept of liberty itself. And he's absolutely correct. When we come back, we'll talk about what else is being destroyed that's not only going to get a lot of people enslaved, but probably exterminated. Welcome back to the second segment for this evening, folks. This is Mark Call, and what we saw in the first segment, that there's all kinds of news about how we're descending into masked totalitarianism, with a senile Chinese puppet allegedly at the helm. There's still really only one major story this week that absolutely puts everything else in perspective. And this was an interview by Dr. Phil McMillan with a self-acknowledged vaccine expert and lover who begins a letter that he wrote prior to this by saying, "I'm all but an anti-vaxxer." Yeah, folks, vaccinophile is a better word. Dr. Geert Vandenbosch, one of the foremost experts on the planet, who's been involved with not only a lot of development of various vaccines, but also the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Gavi as well. The guy is... We've seen a number of excellent physicians and doctors come forward, people like Dr. Lee Merritt, Dr. Joseph Mercola, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and others, making a more than excellent case for why it is that anybody with half a brain wouldn't want anybody coming close to them with a needle bearing this particular, as I call it, Zyklon B poison. So it's almost shocking to see such a warning from somebody that's arguably on the other team. Because it's clear up front that Dr. Bosch doesn't share that understanding. But what he does understand is why putting this vaccine in a whole lot of people on a massive worldwide scale in, as he puts it, the midst of a pandemic, is nothing short of a disaster almost guaranteed to happen. And I give credit to Dale Bigtree of the High Wire as well for not only helping to publicize the interview with Dr. Vandenbosch, but to provide some excellent commentary on the high-level scientific detail therein. So let's start with the man's bona fides. Dr. Geert Vandenbosch is a vaccine research expert with a long list of companies and organizations that he's worked on doing vaccine discovery and preclinical research, including GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, Novartis, Solvay Biologicals, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where he was a senior program officer in vaccine discovery, as well as the former head of the vaccine development office for the German equivalent of the CDC, as well as a university professor. Says Dryberg.com, he's also board certified in virology and microbiology, author of over 30 publications, and inventor of a patent application for universal vaccines, and currently works as an independent vaccine research consultant. At least he did, up until he made these public statements, and now is, of course, being vilified by so many in the Big Brother public-private partnership with Big Pharma. And by way of background, the tempest began back on March 3rd when he tweeted the following, quote, "I'm extremely concerned about the impact current COVID-19 vaccines will have when increasingly deployed in mass vaccination campaigns conducted in the heat of a pandemic. Read my global warning and scientific evidence," whereupon he gives his links to an open letter written to, among others, WHO? The World Health Organization, urging that they halt all such mass vaccinations immediately or, quote, "an uncontrollable monster will be unleashed." And what's interesting and quite compelling is the why behind that statement. From there, let me start with the introduction that he himself wrote in his letter addressed to, quote, "all authorities, scientists, and experts around the world to whom this concerns, the entire world population. I," he begins, "am all but an anti-vaxxer. As a scientist, I do not usually appeal to any platform of this kind to make a stand on vaccine-related topics. As a dedicated virologist and vaccine expert, I only make an exception when health authorities allow vaccines to be administered in ways that threaten public health, most certainly when scientific evidence is being ignored. The present extremely critical situation forces me to spread this emergency call. As the unprecedented extent of human intervention in the COVID-19 pandemic is now at risk of resulting in a global catastrophe without equal, this call cannot sound loudly and strongly enough. And again he says it, as stated, I'm not against vaccinations. On the contrary, he continues, I can assure you that each of the current vaccines have been designed, developed, and manufactured by brilliant and competent scientists. However, this type of prophylactic vaccines are completely inappropriate and even highly dangerous when used in mass vaccination campaigns during a viral pandemic. Oops, sick, he misspelled that, but there's a bit of editorial comment from your host. And that's where I'll begin with a couple of clips from the interview with Dr. McMillan. Dr. Bosch begins with a war analogy, where he says if you're going to go to war, you'd better make sure your soldiers have the right weapon. Whereupon he says, yeah, the vaccines are a really great weapon. They're just not the right one for this situation.
And the weapon in itself can be an excellent weapon. And that is what I'm saying, really, about the current vaccines. I mean, it's just brilliant people who have been making these vaccines in no time and with regulatory approval and everything. So the weapon in itself is excellent. Question is this the right weapon for the kind of war that is going on right now? And there my answer is definitely no. Because these are prophylactic vaccines, and prophylactic vaccines should typically not be administered to people who are exposed to high infectious pressure.
All right, let's pause there for a second. So this is a vaccine expert saying that the point of a prophylactic vaccine is to administer before whatever it is you're dealing with becomes a pandemic. And hopefully, at least if you understand the rationale behind the vaccines, to prevent it from ever becoming a pandemic in the first place. Well, when it comes to the COVID-1984 pandemic, it's obviously way too late now for that. And what this expert is fixing to say is, you know what? Your body has a whole different immune response when it's exposed to a little bit of a pathogen than it does when it's right in the middle of a stinking pandemic.
And prophylactic vaccines should typically not be administered to people who are exposed to high infectious pressure. So don't forget, we are administering these vaccines in the heat of a pandemic. So in other words, while we are preparing our weapon, we are fully attacked by the virus. The virus is everywhere. So that is a very different scenario from using such vaccines in a setting where the vaccinee is barely or not exposed to the virus. And I'm saying this because if you have a high infectious pressure, it's so easy for the virus to jump from one person to the other. So if your immune response, however, is just mounting, as we see right now with a number of people who get their first dose. They get their first dose, the antibodies are not fully mature, or titers are maybe not very high, so their immune response is suboptimal. But they are in the midst of this war. While they are mounting an immune response, they are fully attacked by the virus. And every single time, I mean, this is textbook knowledge, every single time you have an immune response that is suboptimal.
Now, this is important, too, and I'm going to repeat it. Notice what he says. Every time you have, and this is plain old textbook knowledge, an immune response that is suboptimal, less than it ought to be, you're on the risk of, well, let's put it this way, things not working out exactly as planned. And therein lies the rub.
And every single time, I mean, this is textbook knowledge, every single time you have an immune response that is suboptimal, in the presence of an infection, in the presence of a virus that infects that person, you are at risk for immune escape. So that means that the virus can escape to the immune response. And that is why I'm saying that these vaccines, I mean, in their own right, are of course excellent. But to use them in the midst of a pandemic and do mass vaccination, because then you provide within a very short period of time the population with high antibody titers, so the virus comes under enormous pressure. I mean, that wouldn't matter if you can eradicate the virus, if you can prevent infection. But these vaccines don't prevent infection.
Whoa, whoa, full stop. What he said there is of vital importance. In other words, and Del Bigtree put it this way. This is why they tell you when you have a bacterial infection and you take antibiotics, always take it all. Because if you don't get every single bit of it, if you don't kill it dead, 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 then whatever is left might just mutate and come back more angry and pissed off and nasty than ever. But here, folks, they're administering this vaccine to tens or hundreds of millions of people, and there are many of them going to have a suboptimal response. The vaccine isn't going to kill the virus dead, dead, dead. No, just enough of it that it might mutate in a literal human bio-incubator and produce something even nastier.
I mean, that wouldn't matter if you can eradicate the virus, if you can prevent infection. But these vaccines don't prevent infection. They protect against disease. Because we are just, unfortunately, we look no further than the end of our nose. In a sense that hospitalization, that's all what counts. You know, getting people away from the hospital. But in the meantime, we are not realizing that we give all the time during this pandemic, by our interventions, the opportunity to escape to the immune system. And that is, of course, a very, very, very dangerous thing, especially if we realize that these guys, they only need 10 hours to replicate. So if we think that by making new vaccines and new vaccine against the new infectious strains, we are going to catch up. It's impossible to catch up. I mean, the virus is not going to wait till we have those vaccines ready. I mean, this thing continues. And as I was saying, the thing is, I mean, if you do this in the midst of a pandemic, that is an enormous problem. These vaccines are excellent, but they are not made for administration to millions of people in the heat of a pandemic.
Now here I pause, because Dr. Vandenbosch is giving these brilliant people, at least some of them, by his statement, the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's a wonderful weapon, but they've deployed it in the middle of the wrong war. And as he suggests in his letter, it is, quote, difficult to understand how current human interventions will prevent circulating variants from turning into a wild monster, unquote. Whereupon he urges that the scientists to whom the letter is written initiate a debate on the detrimental consequences of what he calls further viral immune escape, and provides a whole lot of scientific background on his reasoning. Let me summarize it this way, folks. In the process, you may note that I'm not being quite as careful to avoid giving offense to those that, arguably, are being used here by the truly evil ones as useful idiots. Dr. Vandenbosch is suggesting that the government plandemic public-private partners are using as much of the human population as they possibly can as one great big human biological bioweapon incubator, to produce deadly variants of something that otherwise they couldn't have done in nearly as effective or time-efficient a fashion. This isn't just a global experiment on the human population. This is a global bioweapon breeding program. And it's at this point that Dr. Vandenbosch's letter becomes not only a lot more technical, but all the more terrifying if you understand just how insidiously evil what's really going on is, even though he tries to couch it in very much purely technical terms. A large part of this has to do with the way your immune system works. You're fearfully and wonderfully made, and the immune system actually consists of multiple levels. You may, for example, have heard of things called NK cells, or natural killer cells, and other elements of your body's first-line defense against viral and bacterial invaders that basically just knows the difference between us and them. Those things that are coming in aren't part of this body. They don't belong, so let's get rid of them. In a more generic sense, there are things called antibodies that are either non-specific, meaning they know to attack anything that doesn't belong, or more specific. Specific antibodies that your body developed because, hey, we had this disease, maybe when we were children before vaccinations, mumps or measles or chicken pox, and now we know what that looks like. If they ever show up again, we're going to get rid of them. Those are the antibodies that are developed by your body in response to a specific pathogen. And that, by the way, is what the vaccines are developing. Specific antibodies to a specific thing. And here you've probably heard the term spike protein. Part of the idea of the mRNA is to modify your DNA so that it has a recipe for how to build this thing, whether they've ever seen it before in this case or not. And at least one of the problems is, if right here in the middle of this war, your body gets all focused on building specific responses to a specific spike protein that may not be the actual variant that the other people are out there developing in their own bodies and shedding, well, it's going to go through the population, to paraphrase General George S. Patton, like crap through a goose. And here Dr. Bosch returns to the analogy of an antibiotic that has to be matched to the thing that it's going to be an antibiotic against, just like those specific antibodies need to match specifically the thing they're going to fight against.
We need to have a very good match, otherwise there could be resistance. So when I compare this to the current situation, do we have a good match with our antibodies? No, at this point in time, we don't have a good match anymore because we have this kind of like almost heterologous variants, so that differs from the original strain. So the match isn't very good anymore. And hence we see people are still protected, but they are already shedding the virus.
Ooh, that doesn't sound good at all, unless, of course, the real plan is to create a massive human worldwide bioreactor to develop new strains of a wonderful bioweapon that you couldn't otherwise do on a small scale at all. And here, I guess you could say a lot of the dots begin to connect.
If you now give people just like one dose, I mean, they are in the process of mounting their antibodies, the antibodies still need to fully mature, etc. So this is a suboptimal situation. We are putting them in a suboptimal situation with regard to their immune protection. And on the other hand, they are in the midst of the war. They are fully attacked by all, you know, by all these kinds of highly infectious variants. So, I mean, it's very clear that this is driving immune escape and will ultimately drive resistance to the vaccines. So my point is, yes, Flip, it's very similar. There is one difference. The virus needs living cells. I mean, if you're driving immune escape, but the guy has no chance to jump on somebody else, who cares? Mm-hmm. The situation is now different because we are in the midst of a war. There is a high infectious pressure. So the likelihood that an immune escape immediately finds another living cell, that means another host, is very, very high. It's per definition. It's the definition almost of a pandemic.
And guess what? He goes on to explain, let's call this a bit of inside microbiology and virology, why it is that these specific type of antibodies seem to outcompete the less specific ones that actually do a better job of protecting us against something we don't know is coming. Which is bad news, real bad news, for the individual that thinks they're being protected, but might be good news if the goal isn't to protect a population, but instead to develop a better bioweapon, or maybe just exterminate a large part of the human population. Mike Adams and some of the summaries from Dryberg.com go on to explain that a significant part of Dr. Bosch's concerns rests on what he calls immune escape. Bosch states that from multiple emerging and much more infectious viral variants, we're already seeing examples of such immune escape from our innate immunity, in other words, what our Creator put in us, and they were most likely created by government interventions themselves, the so-called NPIs, or non-pharmacological interventions, things like lockdowns and idiotic facial cloth coverings, unofficially, but also, they're more aptly known, says Adams, as non-scientific interventions. In other bullet points, Dr. Bosch believes that ongoing mass vaccination deployments are, quote, highly likely to further enhance adaptive immune escape, as none of the current vaccines will prevent replication or transmission of viral variants, that's the key word, and as such, the more we use these vaccines for immunizing people in the midst of a pandemic, the more infectious the virus will become. Gee, folks, I'll say it again, almost like somebody was using these useful idiots to provide exactly that outcome. On the most massive experimental scale in human history, and, said Dr. Bosch, with increasing infectiousness comes an increased likelihood of viral resistance to the vaccines. A big part of the key here is that in order to fully escape, when you put hundreds of millions of people in this mass human bioreactor, the highly mutable virus, quote, only needs to add another few mutations, maybe even just one or two, in its receptor binding domain. Now here, folks, your host will pause again briefly to make an observation that I made elsewhere, but I think it fits here. If your goal is also to produce, say, some race-specific bioweapons in the process, well, isn't it great you've got a worldwide stage to play on as well? And no doubt there'll be lots of people out amongst the peons looking for exactly, well, what they're looking for. If you're not cynical by this point, you're just not paying attention. And as Mike Adams notes, what Dr. Bosch calls innate immunity is crucial to halting the cycle of mutations and infections that drive the three distinct waves of pandemic disease. And yet, innate immunity, in other words, the kind that our Creator built into our immune system if we allowed it to function as designed, that natural immunity expressed by people without vaccines is given no recognition whatsoever by the vaccine-crazed medical establishment and global political institutions now pushing for those same literally satanic global mass infection, vaccinations. Here's how Dr. Geert Vandenbosch put it in the big finish to his letter. It's becoming increasingly difficult, he wrote, to imagine how the consequences of the extensive and erroneous human intervention in this pandemic are not going to wipe out large parts of our human population. One could only think of very few other strategies to achieve the same level of efficiency in turning a relatively harmless virus into a bioweapon of mass destruction. Unquote. And yeah, he really said it. Oh, and for those that have a bit of a biblical understanding for what is food and what is not food, this paragraph is interesting too. He follows that up by saying, it's also certainly worth mentioning that mutations in the S protein, i.e. exactly the same protein that is subject to selection of escape mutations, are known to enable coronaviruses to cross species barriers. That is to say that the risk that vaccine-mediated immune escape could allow the virus to jump to other animal species, especially industrial livestock, e.g. pig and poultry farms, is not negligible. Those species are already known to host several different coronaviruses and are usually housed in farms with high stocking density. And similar to the situation with influenza viruses, these species could serve as an additional reservoir for SARS-CoV-2 virus. And he won't suggest it, but I will again. I guess if you're looking to add famine to the mix, it's a great part of the bigger picture plan, isn't it? Whereupon he notes that the distribution of this plandemic has been disturbed from the very beginning. Quote, widespread and stringent infection prevention measures combined with mass vaccination campaigns using inadequate vaccines will undoubtedly lead to a situation where the plandemic is getting increasingly, and he puts it in quotes, out of control. I'm appealing, he says finally, to the WHO and all stakeholders involved. See, he uses the politically correct terminology here. No matter their conviction, to immediately declare such action. And by that he means replacing, quote, the current killer vaccines with life-saving vaccines as, quote, the single most important public health emergency of international concern. But when it comes to the use of most of the human population as literally a living bioreactor to generate new versions of the bioweapon that's already proved so successful in destroying what was left of freedom in most of the world, we're really just getting started. This comes from Mike Whitney at the UNS Review, and it's called Operation Vax All Deplorables, or as he puts it, codename Satan's Poker. What's going on in Israel, the piece begins. Has anyone figured it out yet? Isn't Israel the most vaccinated country in the world? Yes, it is. Haven't half of all Israelis already been poked? Yes, they have. And haven't 90% of all Israelis over the age of 60, the age group allegedly most likely to die from the booga booga flu, already been vaccinated? Yeah, that's true too. So then how did Israel manage to double the number of deaths it accumulated in the prior 10 months of the entire pandemic within just 2 months of intensive inoculation with the Pfizer vaccine? That's not a question you're likely to hear asked too many places now, is it? And just why, says Whitney, did Israel's COVID-19 cases spike sharply during the first month of the mass vaccination campaign? And why, after just 2 months of mass vaccinations, are fully 76% of all new COVID-19 cases affecting people under the age of 39? Only 5.5% are over 60, and 40% of the critical patients are under 60. You gotta ask, did the vaccinations shift the direction of the infection to a different demographic? Or have the vaccines created a more virulent strain? Good question, isn't it? Of the virus that now manages to target younger people. Why, just exactly like Dr. Geert Vandenbosch has been warning. But wait, there's more. Why have more pregnant women suddenly entered critical care while COVID-19 cases among infants have soared by a whopping 1,300%? And why, oh why, he asks, have both Orthodox Jews and Israeli Arabs experienced a sudden and dramatic shift in cases and fatalities when both groups had very similar numbers just prior to the vaccination campaign? Why, this might be a clue. While Orthodox Jews went en masse to take their poke, the Palestinians, or Israeli Arabs, did not follow the same pattern. In the early stages of the vaccination campaign, we saw a 15 times rise in morbidity cases in the Orthodox Jewish segment, while there was a similar and significant drop in morbidity in the Israeli Arab segment. By not taking the vaccine, it seems, their level of morbidity dropped sharply. Which means the evidence suggests a close correlation between mass vaccination, cases, and deaths. And says the author tells us two things. One, we knew this, the media spreading disinformation about Israel's fictitious success in fighting the Boga-Boga flu, and furthermore, the vaccinations may have created a new strain of infection that's both more contagious and more lethal than the original. Why, gee, folks, somebody better tell Bill and Melinda, and of course Dr. Mengele, mission accomplished. That doesn't mean, however, that the rest of us should stand by while truly satanic forces try to wipe out the bulk of humanity. We can say no to the masks, the pokes, the poisons, the destruction, by any and every means necessary, because at this point it's clear our lives depend on it. But most importantly, we better know who we serve and who we can trust, because it's obvious who we can't.